Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Carson Partners, a division of CWM, LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors. This is The Way to Wealth. With host Scott Ford, a jiu-jitsu fighting, woodworking, beekeeping entrepreneur who is also the managing director, partner, and wealth advisor of Carson Wealth. Financial freedom is the goal, and clarity and simplicity is how we'll get there. Let's get to it. This is Way to Wealth.
Hello, and welcome back to the Way to Wealth podcast, where we're all about making money simple so you can fully live and fully live today. This week, we are going to be talking about cash flow and control. And with me on the podcast is the brains of the organization. And so that certainly does not include me. So I'm just going to go from the order of the boxes that I see on the screen. You all have heard Jake Stone on the podcast. Welcome back, Jake. And Sam Wilkerson. Welcome back, Sam. Jeremy Day, I don't think you've been on yet. So welcome to the Way to Wealth for the first time, but not last, Jeremy. And then Eric Mikulski's been on as well. Welcome back, Eric. So what we want to talk about today is really cash flow tips for 2024, which may date the podcast. But hey, here we are. We're at the end of 2023 as we record this. And we've done a class on cash flow and control, which is a block. And really, to me, it's the biggest piece or it's the combination of the Way to Wealth process. At the end of the day, my personal perspective, wealth management ends up being about cash flow and control. And what the other blocks typically do, done right, should lead to more cash flow and more control for you. So as an example, tax reduction strategy, estate plan and legacy, insurance maximization, asset protection, interest rate and credit review, all of these things done right should typically lead to more cash flow and more control for you in wealth management. So that's really what the masterclass was about. Today, I wanted to bring other team members on to share ideas for cash flow tips for 2024 and what may be applicable for you going into this next year. So with that, I'm just going to open it up, gang. Jump in, whoever has an idea or a thought on tax tips, thinking through that lens for the year 2024. Ready? Go.
The best cash flow tip would be to have Shohei Ohtani's agent. That's probably the best addition to have with that big contract.
Yes, I missed it. What did you say it again, Jake?
So this has been, I think it was news over the weekend or earlier this week. Shohei Ohtani signed a 10-year, $700 million contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's interesting. He's only taking $2 million a year. He's deferring the rest of it to start in 10 years. So maybe he had his income bucket in mind in 10 years. I'm not sure, but it was well constructed to help the team win now. That's why I did that, and him to have success later. So the joke of it would be that definitely his agent knew what he was doing when it came to cash flow and control.
It's a good point. How often does that not end well, ended up getting spent through and blown, or even worse, they can mess their lives up a bit at the worst case. But yeah, that's actually if we all could have that benefit and that fortune, yeah, we would be set. But thought about longevity, right, and having cash flow for future years, not at all in year one.
Well, hopefully he worked in some sort of interest accrual, because otherwise the Dodgers are just making money on his $700 million for a decade. So
this is also true, right?
I'm guessing
there's problems to have.
Stipulation. I'm guessing there's a stipulation in there.
Yeah, but think of that, right, too, as well, because people think of, to your point, Sam, it's like tipping the IRS. You know, if you're overpaying in taxes, and even if you get a refund the following year, that just simply meant you overpaid. So who got access to that capital the remaining time during that deferral? You're giving them free use of their money. Is that a wise use of capital?
Well, Scott, on that note, I would say it's probably important going into 2024 to make sure your withholdings are appropriate, right?
Yeah, I've just gotten off two tax calls with CPAs this week in which both the CPA and the client could have done a little bit more attention to the withholdings And it was sort of one of those things with a client where they needed all the money then and they didn't do withholdings. And now it's come back to be difficult when the tax bill is due. And so, to Eric, to your point, we've seen a lot of people, especially first year of Social Security, when they sign up, because a lot of times it depends on the agent you're working with, or if you do it online, they don't necessarily prompt you sometimes to sign up for federal withholding. And especially if it's two clients and they're pulling in 60, 70 grand a year, it's huge. So, right, people get double dinged. A, they're getting a big tax bill. And then next time around, they're like, in order to not happen, you got to start taking taxes out, but they've already adjusted their lifestyle and budgeting based on this big number. So then they get whipsawed on that. And so that's just one thing we're really poking clients and encouraging when you go down to the office and sign up, do a nice withholding under Social Security.
Yeah, to echo that, Sam, Jeremy and I, you know, worked with a few individuals where all we focused on in the meeting this quarter was cash flow for next year. So retired this year and, you know, they don't have that salary coming in anymore. And it's a life-changing experience. So that was a part of it too. Tax withholding and Social Security, they got that straightened out and they signed up. So, you know, good kudos for them. And then, you know, with inflation, right, it's still a pain point for a lot of people. And we've seen some folks still not take that into consideration for next year. You know, we would say to don't assume it's going to go down, just expect it to stay where it's at and, you know, prepare for the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing about, you know, the other add-on, I would say, just when I think of cash flow and control and the way to wealth process, as I said, the foundational, you know, blocks, bricks that I mentioned should lead to more cash flow and control. In other words, you're reducing costs or expenses, which should lead to more cash in our control and in our pockets and our clients' pockets. Then with that, we talk about how do you allocate that capital and how do you allocate that cash flow? And as you are well aware, we use a three bucket approach of savings, income, and growth. And maybe we could talk a little bit about that. Why do we do that? And then we want to talk about tax diversification, because how you get to that money is going to be taxed really in one of three ways. It's going to be tax deferred. So it's going to be taxable coming out of a qualified plan or something like that, or it's going to be taxable, or it's going to be tax free. So that's really, that's how we look at cash flow and control, is allocating capital for cash flow and control. So maybe we could talk a little bit about that as well. Why is that important? You mentioned it earlier, you know, kidding about the athlete, Jake, that, but really, you know, that's a bit of a bucketing approach, you know, thinking of cash now, cash the next 10 years, and then cash beyond. So any thoughts on that for how we do that and for tips for people going into 2024?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think whether it's the bucketing that we do or defined by kind of a timeline, you hear people use that now money, later money, whatever it is. I think having some set, if you don't already, using the beginning of the year to set some expectations there and put some dividers in that money is huge. It sets you up short term and long term. It's easy for people to fall into the trap of just not being very intentional with the money coming in or going out. And if you don't have those kind of filters in place for what's going to savings, what's being invested, what are we looking at over the next year? What's 2+ year money? What's long term money? You can lose sight of things pretty quick and get off track on any goals that you're setting up for in those time periods as well. So it's huge to be intentional about that. It's a good thing to, whether it be start, sit down and say, you know, what plan are we using? Are we using the bucketing? Are we using timeframes, whatever it is, or to readjust to Eric's point, not just withholding, but, you know, contributions change each year. Your needs may change each year. You may have had a kid or gotten married or gotten divorced or had all these changes that came in the last year, and they're going to change your targets for all of those things. So using that beginning of the year to set that up is a great time to do so.
You guys are in the trenches every day, you know, working with clients, of course, seeing what's happening and giving advice on a day-to-day basis with people about their capital and their finances. What do you see people is consistently potentially get wrong when it comes to cash flow planning and their finances? What do you see that maybe a misconception or a myth that a lot of people come in with based on our industry, based on their own experience in life, or just based on their perspective? Any thoughts on that that you see working with people on a day-to-day basis? And as I ask that and you sit with it, so like Jake, you said, because to me, my experience has been the transition from working to retirement, really the biggest fear most people have is running out of money. Well, why is that? Because now all of a sudden you go from this paycheck that you're getting, that used to be called, you know, you're in the mailbox, you know, you every month in the mailbox or every week you're getting it. Well, that's kind of gone, right? With electronic and technology, it's no such thing. However, you get the analogy, you're getting that every week, that paycheck. And now when that goes away, that's a big disruptor sometimes for people. They're like, hey, I have this pile of money, but it's not set up where I'm getting this so-called guaranteed paycheck because I'm employed and the employer is going to be sending me this paycheck for the work that I'm doing. It's coming out of this pile of money. And it's just a new psychological mindset for people that scares them and they struggle with. What are your thoughts on that? And what do you see people that typically, what do they get wrong with their thinking on cash flow?
Well, I think one misconception would be that by hiring a financial professional, it absolves the family from still having to put a little bit of work in on their side. What do I mean by that? I've been married now coming up on 4 years, and it was a true education on communication. And even though my wife and I did a lot of financial conversations leading into the marriage to kind of make sure we were still on the same page. Wow. After the marriage, you know, cause I'm used to being in control of finances. There was a shift in how the vernacular we had to use, the goal setting. And some of my friends are like, you make your wife do what? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, once a month, at least we're sitting down in front of the big screen. I'm putting e-money up. We're looking at budgets. We're looking at planning. We're talking about what happened in the past. And then we're talking about the next 2 or 3 months about what are the mud puddles we could step into? What are the big things with medical? What are the big things with the kids coming up? What are the big opportunities to save? Having some fun little goals like, oh, we might have a bonus this quarter. Here's a goal to save. It was tough for the first few months doing that. But now that we're more in tune with that, and another kind of tip was having a dedicated time. It's almost like usually the last day of the month or within that, we know it's that those 2 hours we're sitting down and talking about it. And that's enabled us to have a much smoother flight without as many arguments about money. We're more on the same page. And that would just be something I would encourage spouses to do. I know it's uncomfortable, but even if there's someone who in general is more accountable with the financing, you got to each talk about it. Otherwise, there's going to always be a friction that doesn't need to be there. That's always going to be slowing things down.
Sam, that's just ignorant that you do that. I'm totally kidding. It's a great idea, right? It is a great idea. And we do it, not always at our house. My wife is not a huge fan of that, but we try. And it is a brilliant idea. So it really is. It's communication, because then you have a clear line of sight. And look, one of the biggest things that can be a challenge / pain point in a marriage, if you just look at numbers, they'll talk about it, is finances. It can be a real, people divorce over it at times. So having that, and what's it at the ultimate? It's communication. So this is a great way to have open communication, without telling anyone what to do. It's sharing openly. I think that's a great idea to set that as a ritual, to get together and look at numbers, whether one spouse is bored with it or not. It's great to have just an open conversations about it. I think that's great advice.
Yeah. Sam, my wife and I do the same, as much as she probably doesn't enjoy it. But the reason I tell her it's important is, too many times we see that it's one spouse handling the finances, then retirement comes along, people age, and then maybe the spouse who handled everything passes. Well, then the other surviving spouses maybe has no clue what's going on. They've just been on cruise control, and they don't have someone that they can trust, that they can have that advice and to rely on. We always encourage new clients when they get brought on, include your spouse, please. They may not, be the decision maker at this time, but we need to get to know them. And they need to understand the situation. And then another myth kind of going on to what you said, Scott, is we see so many folks who don't set up the income bucket before they retire, and they've put in their 2 weeks notice or 1 month's notice, and they're just had their retirement party at work, and they don't know where the next paycheck's coming from. That's why we say, hey, you've got to get ahead of the game so you're not stuck behind the eight ball. Because when you are working, the experience we have with clients is that it's all about that return on investment, the rate of return, right? What are they getting in their retirement accounts? But we've always said it shifts. You have to shift the mindset to a new ROI, which is reliability of income, because it is going to be in a more fixed basis. Now we can try to find other opportunities elsewhere. But the going back to the myth point, it's people say, I'm going to wait till I retire to figure it out. Well, that'll, you know, set you up for disaster, because then you're trying to play catch up, and you can't prevent when you want to retire. Some people have a goal set. Some people, it just happens to them because there's an opportunity that, you know, came up and the company wanted to add younger folks and they're moving older people out, whatever the circumstance may be. And you want to be able to know that you don't have a knee-jerk reaction when it comes to your income and pulling it from the wrong source, because that can, you know, short-term solution is a long-term problem.
Mm. A couple of things come in for me. And one is jumping off of that point, Jake and Sam, is I'm thinking of cash flow tips. So let me give a couple. And these tie to the blocks or the bricks of Way to Wealth. But one is, like, have you thought about lending? Right. We think about borrowing a lot. Oh, no, I don't want any debt. And we'll have a conversation another day when we get into that block. But the point is, that's one way to think about it. But another way is, could you lend? Could you do interfamily lending? Could you lend to someone who's into real estate if you like that and you actually, you know, lend to them? Another way to potentially to create cash flow. I'm not saying this fits you. I'm just saying, is it something that you thought of before that you may not have that could be a nice value add to you and your family, that brings income back in, is structured, and then there's things to think about, but it's an idea. Another would be the idea of retirement, you know, and we could get into where that all actually came from. One of the things that I think that people miss going into retirement is the wealth of capital that they've accumulated of wisdom in their lifetime. And just in our culture, a lot of times we set that on the shelf. And I think there's huge value in that wisdom that people could think about not retiring, transitioning out of your current job, and maybe you launch something else that's a venture that you can use your wisdom in and actually start creating some income with that wisdom, right? Thinking outside the box. The other benefit of doing that is all of the things that are in the tax code that benefit you by starting a little side hustle or a business in doing that. So there are just some additional things that most, I don't think, talk about or think about that I think are useful to brainstorm about going into 2024 for people looking to retire or who are retired.
We just had a call earlier today. It's sort of bucketing 2.0, where we're used to savings, income, growth to help yourself. This client has a goal in their life to, this is, again, not everyone is at, everyone's at different levels with planning, but this particular client would like to give like $50,000 a year to different organizations for like the next decade. Well, how do they do that? Well, we've already set up a donor advised fund for them and we're contributing. This particular client retired from corporate America, had been successful and is getting paid out large sums from a deferred compensation plan for 5 years. They're in between federal, state, all the things, it's up 40%. And so what we're doing now with these deferred comp, there's surpluses for the next 5 years, and there's huge gains in the brokerage account. So basically what we're going to be doing is really over the next 5 years, when they're in these 40% brackets, really seeding the fourth bucket, which is their donation bucket. And then because 40 cents on the dollar, they're going to get back. And so, and then over the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to get to a large bucket of donation money. And then once the faucets of deferred comp stop and these relying only on pension and withdrawals, then when it comes time to that $50,000 a year donation, now they've got the donor advised fund cooking, and then they can use that. And now they're not having to use their free cash flow going forward for a really long time. So that's a little bit more level 2.0, but that was something we were doing today with the CPA on the line, and we were donating highly appreciated funds to do it as well.
I think that's good, right? It doesn't even have to be that dollar amount, but I think that's good. Eric, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I've done that just recently in the past month, two times for clients as well. So, you know, setting up that fund and front loading it, which allows them to get a bigger tax benefit today, increases their cash flow today. And then once again, they'll have that donor advised fund set up. So it's an immediate increase in cash flow and tax savings. And then for the next 5 to 7 years, they have all the money they need there on an annual basis to give to their charities and not strip that out of their fixed income, Social Security and pensions mainly at this point.
Yeah. What do you do? Any other tax flow tips, just kind of top of mind for anyone? And then I have a couple questions for sure to add.
I mean, this time of year is always the harvesting, loss harvesting that we're doing, trying to reduce the realized gains in a smart way. We're, you know, and then since we're on the charity, the donations through required distribution, since hardly anybody's taken itemized deductions anymore on their tax return. You can use your part of your R&D, send it to the charity of your choice, and you don't have to claim that piece as income to yourself. And I believe even though your R&D may be 72, 73 now based on your age, I think you're allowed to start doing those QCDs right around 70 and a half still, give or take. And so you don't feel like you still got to wait to 72, 73 for that.
You know, I have one other thing on my mind. From cash flow standpoint, I think, you know, we've obviously seen a lot of inflation lately, right, over the last couple of years. And I think people underestimate how inflation can impact cash flow going forward, especially after not having inflation for so long, or at least that not being too visible to us. So I think when we go to the bucketing strategy, right, the savings, the income, and then specifically the growth bucket, right? It's important to have or understand the bucketing, have it in place. And then that growth bucket is the bucket that accounts for future inflation and all of that. So I think it's very important to, you know, from a bucketing standpoint, to, you know, for people to understand that, and that is one of the solutions to take care of future inflation cash flow issues.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? And we were talking earlier just about what people worry about coming in retirement or being retired early in, and that is that paycheck that's gone, which is really one of the premises of bucketing, right? They know they have a year in cash or cash equivalents available. They know they have 10 years of income or more set aside. So they have that window of 10 years basically to ride out volatility or various things that happen. As my friend Tom Dorsey used to always say, BST. In the market, which stands for big, scary things. It happens almost every year. There's some BST in the market, big, scary thing. That's the economy, right? That's the world we live in. Things are going to happen. This helps navigate BSTs, especially because you retire, then you have this big event that happens in the economy, the market. People are like, oh my gosh, right? Because before I'm getting a paycheck, now all of a sudden this is my portfolio. These buckets really help navigate that, right? Where you have the savings, that stability of income for 10 years, and then the growth to keep up with inflation, like you said, Eric. And you think about the inflation, it gives you an opportunity to invest in things that are causing inflation. So I like to always give the example in the past of you go to the pump and you're like kind of pissing and moaning about the cost that's going on. Well, you can invest in the company that's benefiting from that cost that's going up in inflation, right? That's the idea of having money in that growth bucket. What else? If people were to, I know a lot of times, speaking of that, so I said big scary things and I said volatility. Some people just want, you know, first of all, it's a misconception that your paycheck from the employer is a guarantee, because it can change, right? That you could leave, the company's no longer there, who knows, but people think it is in our psyche. So coming into retirement, when that goes away, some people still want guarantees. Right? Is there a way for people to navigate and still get some sort of, you got to be careful with the word, I understand guarantee, but stability of income for them, where they have that sleep at night factor box checked?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you look at the, like you said, the big scary things, right? I think that's why such a big tip is defining some of what that number needs to be? Like, what is the number? Okay, you made 100,000 or whatever, say, before you retired. What is the number that you have to reach to feel okay, so that we don't have to look at those big scary things and knee jerk react? I think that's kind of step one. Step two is then, once you have that number, to your point, plugging and playing some tools and some resources there that fill that number up as consistently and as securely as possible. There's a bunch of stuff out there. We've seen a lot of it come into focus in the last couple of years. Just, you bring up the big scary things. I mean, how many can we think of alone in the last, 2 years? Like, we had COVID and Russia, Ukraine, and election stuff, and every single one of them, but the inflation things, interest rate adjustment, every single one of them, I got at least one call, and I know you guys did too, of like, oh, this is it. This is the thing that's going to break it finally. So if you can define that number and work towards that and find the tools and resources to play that make that number possible, it takes a little bit of the edge off for a lot of that. There's still going to be some of it. We live in a world that's just, you know, you get headlines and everything. How many clicks can we get? How much attention can we get to this issue? You're going to deal with that to some degree, no matter what. But if you can find those tools that have some guarantees or some set consistent benefit from, it goes a long way towards taking some of that weight off your shoulders for sure.
And think of what we're talking about here, right? With what you shared, Jeremy, and I said BST, and you added on to that, big scary things. That's it. If we navigate properly cash flow and control, you're solving for the BSTs. Mm-hmm. Because when you know you have the cash flow coming in, you know it's set up in a way that you feel like you have some control over it. It's not just going to change on a month-to-month basis. Mm-hmm. Now you have a sleep at night factor typically that you're like, all right, I'm good. I got my expenses and a buffer taken care of for X amount of years. There's my cash flow and control. And there's so many ways to do that, but literally that's what the Way to Wealth is designed to solve. Mm-hmm. Are there thoughts, any changes going into 2024? Or any additional thoughts any of the four of you would like to share as we look to wrap things up here on the Cash Flow and Control 2024 podcast update?
I think for as people transition from accumulators to people who pull money out, it's very natural when you're building your investment accounts to want to reinvest all of your dividends all the time, because it makes sense. As you transition to now turning the faucets on and pulling out, it's, you know, when the market's going up, everyone still likes reinvesting and then withdrawing. But in a situation where the markets are plummeting or staying flat, one thing you could ask yourself is, what if I just turn my dividends on to not reinvest anymore, to collect in a little cash bucket? So every month when I'm pulling my money out to live on, the dividends are providing already this much amount of water in the bathtub to help me get to where I need to go. So only the difference is what you have to draw from actual sale trades and things like that. It's just one more way to build that middle income bucket with bucketing. And oftentimes it's just one of those easy things that people just forget to check the box on their account to do that. So easily fixed.
It's good. Yeah, go ahead, Jake. Were you going to add something?
Yeah, I was going to say we've implemented a lot of that recently. And like you said, Sam, especially with the volatility, it's helped because, you know, the less you have to sell or liquidate, and the more you can just be paid rent, so to speak, from whatever you own and use that as income. And one other thing I was going to add, just kind of as a tip, we've seen it a lot recently, whether someone, you know, sells a business or has a big life event happen, and they tell the advisor or ask for help after the fact, and you get up to, you know, the end of the year and the calendar and hot way holidays fall and all of that good stuff, and you run out of time to do these, you know, very intricate planning, you know, platforms or tools to implement that we can utilize. So we always say, if there's something that affiliates a dollar sign in your life that, you know, you go and fill off your or with gas is a different story. But if you have something that you are like, I'm not sure what the best way to handle that is, please let someone know on our team, because we want to make sure we check all of the boxes off for planning opportunities And then making sure that if there are any consequences, especially on the tax side, because no one wants to have to pay more than they have to, that you're utilizing that resource. Because once you go forward, sometimes you can't go backwards. And that way you're, you know, using every resource you have before making a decision.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. I'll wrap things up here with just this. I mean, this is the way to wealth. It's about cash flow and control. So these foundational blocks of tax reduction strategy, estate, legacy, asset protection, insurance maximization, interest rate credit leads to more cash flow and control. It builds the foundation of the plan. Then on top of that, focusing on cash flow and control, you have a savings allocation of bucket of you know, liquid opportunity money. I like call it a war chest of capital. Then you have income, ideally for the rest of your life set up, but at least 10 years. Then you have growth, handling inflation like Eric talked about. And then we have tax diversification of tax deferred, taxable, and tax-free. That also focuses on cash flow. So that's the premise. That's the way to wealth. And I'll just add some final thoughts of things you could think about cash flow. What about a business? Investing in a business, your own or someone else's, that has cash flow and profitability, that leads to potential cash flow. What about real estate? You'd invest in real estate, whether it's a fund of real estate or whether you buy individual properties or whatever type of real estate resonates with you that you think may be on sale, but it's providing potential cash flow. What about stocks? You're owning businesses that are spinning off dividends, as Sam talked about. So dividend paying stocks can create cash flow. What about options, straddles, puts, calls, all kinds of option strategies that are out there, call right strategies that produce income on stocks? What about loans? As I mentioned, loans to family members, loans to people that you know that you feel like are solid that can bring cash flow back in. What about closed-end funds? So I'm just giving you some ideas. There's lots of ways to solve for cash flow. That's the way to wealth. That's what it's designed for. Then I just kind of rambled off several different strategies that you could think about as far as cash flow. So hopefully you found this useful. The brains are here. Sam and Eric are in Atlanta. Jeremy and Jake are in Tennessee. Of course, I'm out of Maryland. You know, we're here to answer questions. We put this out for educational purposes. You know, the four reasons that we do this and the rate of wealth is created for. One of them is education. So we hope that you found this educational, and we're here to support in any way you can. Gang, thanks for joining and sharing. Clearly, we'll do it again. And thanks, everyone, for joining the Way to Wealth podcast. We'll see you back here again next week.
The opinions voiced in Way to Wealth with Scott Ford, Managing Director, Partner, and Wealth Advisor of Carson Wealth, are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Way to Wealth are not affiliated with CWM LLC or Cetera Advisor Networks LLC. Legato Family is not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks LLC or CWM LLC. Carson Wealth, 19833 Leitersburg Pike, Suite 1, Hagerstown, Maryland, 21742.